My legs are very sore. I was losing a toenail. I couldn't swallow properly because I'd taken too many of those goos. And some sweat had come down my forehead and gone into my eye. It was making my eye sting.
Bruce Fordyce knows all about the pain and glory of the Comrades Marathon. Between 1981 and 1988, he won the South African endurance event 8 times in a row. A 9th win followed in 1990. He has completed the 55-mile race an incredible 30 times. But it's winning he loves the most.
As you come into the stadium, there's a little boy, a little girl who hands you a baton. And you carry that baton, it's like a relay baton. But inside it, it's got a message from the mayor of the one city to the mayor of the other city.
Crossing the Comrades finish line with that baton in hand is an experience like no other.
And I can't tell you what that thing feels like. It feels like a magic wand or Excalibur or, you know, a lightsaber.
As well as his Comrades success, Bruce is a former world record holder over 50 miles and 100 kilometres. He won the London to Brighton Ultra Marathon 3 years in a row, and he's the chief executive of Parkrun South Africa. What a guest to have on the Running Tales podcast. But how did his running journey begin?
From very, very early. I've always loved running. And so I have photographs of myself standing in the line with a whole, in a queue with a whole lot of young Gurkha soldier children. My father was a Gurkha officer to collect a prize from some little race that I ran. And I just, throughout my life, I found that the longer the race was, the better I did. But I still had a fair turn of speed. So then I went to school in England. I went to King's School Canterbury, the junior King's School Canterbury. And I remember the athletics days there that I was always good at in those days, the 880 yards, the 440 yards. We didn't do meters and stuff like that. And then when we came to South Africa, then I was also quite good at running, you know. In my final 2 years at school, I won the school cross country. But then my school was a very small kind of almost artistic intellectual school. So winning the school cross country didn't really mean too much, because if you were able to run the whole way without walking, you would probably make the top 5. And if you could throw in a sprint, you would win it. So, and then when I went to university in Johannesburg, then 2 years I just partied and did what all students did, partied and studied and worked to pass my degree. And then in the end of my third year, I think I decided I'm going to run. And in South Africa, in the same way that the UK has got London Marathon, our biggest race is a race called the Comrades Marathon, which is not really a marathon. It's 90 kilometers, so it's 54 miles, but it's 100 years old. This year. And so it's indelibly kind of etched into the DNA of all South Africans. It's one of our great sporting events. So in the same way that in England or the UK, you would stop to watch the FA Cup final or the Grand National or the boat race, we come to a grinding halt, everybody, to watch Comrades, even people who are not interested in sport at all.
Was it the Comrades then that made you think, right, I want to look into longer distance?
Yeah, so I started very with no other purpose in mind except to run the Comrades. It's almost something that is, as a young student like myself, if you want to add something to a very thin CV, you know, when you have no achievements, you served on the SRC or you might have been in the residence house committee and you've passed your degree but not really spectacularly, you need a bit of oomph in your CV. So if you put down that you've run a Comrades, a potential employer would look at that in South Africa and say, oh, okay, this guy can see a project through and can do something that requires a lot of timing and preparation and guts and all those things. So yeah, maybe we'll employ him. So that would have been one of the reasons. But also, as I said, the Comrades is just part of our fabric of South Africa, a bit like our favorite snack Biltong.
Yeah.
One of our favorite sports, rugby. I'm not going to mention that we beat the British Lions on Saturday. So it's just there. And if you are somebody who is a runner, then it will almost trap you. It's like you're doomed to have to do it one day. I started running exactly a year before the following year's Comrades, and I trained on my own for a year and for about 6 months. Then I joined my university marathon club, and then that was it. I ran my first Comrades.
Was it something you did with your mates, or was it for you? You was like, I'm going to.
No. Totally on my own. So my first run from day one with the project of running Comrades, my first run was 10 minutes around our university rugby field. And I ran at night because I didn't want anyone to see me because I was scared that I would embarrass myself. So I ran for 10 minutes. It was June 1976. It was a freezing cold night because it was the middle of winter. And I had to stop and walk a couple of times. But then obviously I'm genetically suited. So very quickly after, and then I carried on going. I didn't, you know, that was it. The mission was to run Comrades. And I didn't run every single day, but regularly throughout each week. And very quickly I was able to run 5Ks and then very quickly 10Ks. And then quite quickly I noticed, because I've written a book on my first Comrades, and I have a training diary that's got all my runs in it. And I noticed very quickly I was running my runs, 10K runs at 4 minutes a kilometer. I didn't know that was quite good. Steady.
Yeah.
But so quickly. So obviously I was genetically suited to running.
So did you join a running club at this point, or just to give you
motivation? So the first 6 months I ran on my own. I never ran with anybody else. I ran on my own. And then after 6 months, the new university year had started. I know in the UK, the year starts in September. For us, it starts in January. So when the new university year started, I joined my university. It's called the University of the Witwatersrand. So I joined the Wits Marathon Club in the first week, in the fresher week, when all the clubs are there and they're all advertising themselves. And, you know, the mountain club, the music club, the whatever. And I joined the marathon club straight away. And then the more experienced runners took us new guys under their wing and told us what to do. But quite quickly they realized, no, this new guy's good. He's quite fast. And so, it was just a logical buildup. They take you through all the steps. You run your first half marathon, you run your first marathon, you run your first ultra, and then you run Comrades. And then you go back to studying and partying for 6 months, and then you start again the next year.
What was the best advice you got back then before your first Comrades that you still use now or throughout, you know, the highlight of your ultra running?
Now I'm going to sound slightly arrogant, but I think I thought of a lot of the advice for Comrades. I wrote a lot of the thinking behind how you prepare for Comrades. So I started to question the wisdom of the time. So the approach there was, whoever trains the hardest, if you can train the hardest, you're going to be the most successful. And I worked out, no, it's not the person who trains the hardest. It's the person who trains the cleverest.
Yeah.
It's how well you know your body. And yes, there is some very hard training to be done, but it's not about. In fact, the people who train the hardest often are the ones who end up getting injured and they don't even make it. The best advice was advice that I gave myself, which I learned very quickly, is it getting right ready for a major race is about timing. And it's about when you start that drive. And I sort of worked out myself, and I think it's more or less true for a lot of people, 8 to 10 weeks. Mm-hmm. 8 to 10 weeks of peak training, and then enough time to taper at the end so that you're well rested for the race. And then you go into it. It's not to say you don't run.
Yeah.
You know, an elite athlete comes off a high base anyway, but that intense, focused, driven training 8 to 10 weeks, and you cannot sustain more than that. And also the other one that I found is all your eggs in one basket. You put all your eggs in one basket. In the race that matters for you, you put all of it in there and you get the result. If you mess around with other things on the way there, you get distracted. Particularly, I mean, obviously you probably do it quite easily if you're a short distance track runner, but particularly if you are running a race as brutal as the Comrades Marathon, it takes everything out of you. It requires a lot of recovery and a lot of preparation and careful dedication to that one event. So right now we're right in the middle of the Olympic Games. The athletes who succeed will be the ones who, obviously they all picked it, but they picked it and they didn't get distracted by other things. And they said, I am going to be at my absolute best for that 1 week in Tokyo. And I'm going to deliver the goods, whatever your goal might be. It might, you know, make the final, get a medal, win. They will have worked that out with themselves and their coaches to deliver. And at the time in my era, the runner who quite influenced me a lot because he peaked with absolute precision was a Finnish runner called Lasse Virran. Virran, 1972, 1976, he won the 5,000 meter, 10,000 meter double, the same as Mo Farah. But in between, he was actually very mediocre. In between, in those 4 years in between, he was average. I mean, world-class, but average world-class. Mm. But he made was absolutely at his best for that 1 week. And a lot of people don't know that, for instance, in 76, he won the 5,000 meters, he won the 10,000 meters. And the morning after the 5,000 meter final, he came fifth in the marathon.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, even Mo Farah didn't do that. Yeah, so that was a kind of, and then just the advice we got from the old timers was, that's quite. When I look at it now, the old timers, I would teach them now, you know, what to do. That sounds very. We had to take salt tablets, so it's quite appropriate actually that the British Lions are here playing rugby against us, because when I was in that era, there was a legendary British Lions side led by Willie John McBride, who came to South Africa and didn't lose a single game. They won every single game. And they were frightened of the South African heat. And so they took salt tablets. So because of the British Lions, we all took salt tablets. because we thought we would cramp. So, yeah. You know, it's quite funny just looking back on those days. And our greatest fear was dehydration. So meanwhile, the Comrades is run in winter. But it's run in the province of KwaZulu-Natal, which is subtropical. So most of the Comrades marathons I have run have been hot. So then the next thing we had to fight was dehydration. And actually, after a while, I realized from my own experience that dehydration is not necessarily a thing. It's carbohydrate depletion. You start running out of energy. You need to be taking some kind of energy on when you're running a race that lasts several hours.
A lot as well, that you mentioned the Olympics, and I don't know about the news over in South Africa, if you're getting a lot about the mental health of athletes. You know, it's very highlighted, I've noted, in this Olympics where they are making awareness of their mental health. Back when you was at your peak, how did you and your fellow athletes, did you have support? How did you get through mentally? Because you said about the distance of the Comrades, well, you know, this is a long distance, it's very hard, it's very competitive, there is a lot of training because it is a high mileage. How did you prepare yourself for that?
The mental side of it, yeah, I mean, I particularly once I started winning, the pressure was on me was huge, and then the country started expecting me to win. And so my surname changed in the newspapers from Four Dice to Five Dice to Six Dice to Seven Dice. And I always used to say, yeah, but I'm waiting for you to print the headline of the day afterwards, No Dice, when I lose. But what I did do was I had a very good training program, which worked beautifully for me. And I wasn't distracted or seduced into changing it. So I would do the same thing, more or less. I would tinker with it a little bit, So I might change it because the Comrades is a very strange tradition. One is that it changes direction every year.
Yes.
So 1 year from Durban to Pietermaritzburg, the next year it's down from Maritzburg to Durban. Those two races are the same distance, more or less, but quite different challenges. The down is very different from the up. But I would rely very heavily on that training program. Then I had certain key sessions that I did towards when it got closer to race day that would give me the answers I need. And they were all based on short distance, flat out races. You know, I know it's not fast for 10,000 meter people, but if I could run a 10K in under 30 minutes, then I would know that I'm in good shape. Or if I could run a cross country race, our cross country league started just before Comrades. If I could run a cross country race and finish in amongst the top 10 of cross country specialists, then I would know I'm in great shape. And so that would calm me down a bit, you know, in terms of the mental pressure. It would calm me down because I know not that I'm going to win, but that I'm not putting myself down. I will run with those bits of feedback that I'm getting from my training. I know I'm going to run 5.5 hours. So if you can run faster than 5.5 hours, you're going to beat me, but I'm not going to let myself down. So that was good. And then my training friends, I had a great group who we all trained with. We were all very good. When I look at the group I trained with, we were all, you know, top 10 finishers in races. And in fact, one of my training partners, Mark Plykes, went across to the States and became American citizen. He won the World Championships Marathon.
Oh, wow.
He was a teammate of mine at university. We ran together in cross country league and stuff. So some of our runners were really good. But the very least I would say is that in my training group, the least flashy athlete would at least have provincial colors in our day, Transvaal colors for running. So that was our level. And we would get feedback from each other. And then my friends always used to say, I always looked so frightened in the week before Comrades. I would get very, very frightened. And they said they felt so sorry for me. And then on the morning of the race, they would arrive. We all used to meet in my hotel room before we start, because it starts 5:30 in the morning. So
yeah,
5 o'clock in my hotel room. And they said, we couldn't believe you. You're joking, you're cracking jokes. You're writing messages on your hand so you can read them when you're running. And we're all terrified. And you look like, and so my attitude used to be on the race morning was, okay, guys, let's go and do it. You know, and so I was very good. But in the end, thinking of the mental health issues, in the end, I had had enough. And I finally cracked or lost Comrades in 1991 because the year before I won it, but I won it because the runner who was ahead of me started walking. And I had actually settled for second. And he started walking and I caught him on one of the big hills near the end of the race and I won it. But after I finished, I told my family and my friends, I won't win again. I know I won't win again. I don't have it anymore. And so by the following year, I'd had enough.
It was interesting because looking at your times, you were averaging 5, you know, just over under 5.5 hours, weren't you? Really?
Yeah,
the fastest was 5 hours 24, and that was on the down in 1986. Yeah. And then the slowest was 10 hours. Being honest, from your, and this is what I try and encourage, like with my local runners, it doesn't matter what the time is, but which one did you enjoy the most? I know that might sound silly, but with the 10 hours, obviously you was more with the runners at the back, you're laughing, you know. Over here in the UK, you were saying at the beginning how big it is in South Africa, the Comrades.
Yeah.
It is really poor over here. The coverage of the Comrades is, well, it's non-existent.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You have to go on YouTube to watch where the free interviews are at the key points of the Comrades. And it's, you know, and it just looks like so much fun, the support at these key areas where the interviews take place. Which one did you enjoy the most out of the 30 that you took part in?
Oh, yeah. So what happened was once I had stopped winning, I was a gift I gave myself is like, I gave myself permission to be slow. So I didn't care, but I wanted to be part of the race. And so when you see 10 hours, that's because I went through the race with a great buddy. And 10 hours was his, that was his genetic limit. So yeah. He's trying as he can, and I'm taking him through. That was a lot of fun, but that, you know, winning, you can't take away winning. Is just, it's at the time, obviously the pressure's intense, but I did on a couple of occasions, I won by quite a comfortable gap. Mm-hmm. And on 1988, I had a 12 hour, I was 12 minutes in the lead, and 83, I was about 15 minutes in the lead. And so what I did in those races, when you never know you've won, obviously you never know you've won until you've crossed the line, but I kind of thought like 88, I had 2 kilometers to run. So call it a mile to run. And my seconds, my team who bring you your drinks and everything, they said to me, well done, mate, you've done it, you've won, enjoy it. We'll see you at the finish. And so I took that moment as, and I tried to remember it forever. So I kind of froze it. I froze it, and I can remember that my legs were very sore because I'd done 54 miles, but I was still traveling probably 3.5 minutes a kilometer, you know, so. So I was still running fast. My legs were very sore. I was losing a toenail. You can see that I'm not making this up. I couldn't swallow properly because I'd taken too many of those goos, you know, the energy goos.
Yeah.
I had this like chocolate coffee taste in my mouth because I needed water, but I was going to get water at the finish line. And some sweat had come down my down my forehead and gone into my eye. It was making my eye sting. But I was in the front of the Comrades Marathon. And what happens when you're the race leader is as you come into the stadium, it always finishes with 400 meters around the stadium.
Yeah.
Like many marathons do. There's a little boy, a little girl who hands you a baton. And you carry that baton. It's like a relay baton that relay teams use, but inside it, it's got a message from the mayor of the one city to the mayor of the other city. And you carry that baton across the line. And I can't tell you what that thing feels like. It feels like a magic wand or Excalibur or, you know, a lightsaber. Every single winner of the race who's got that baton, who hasn't raised it up above their head. And just because I get emotional thinking about it now, it's just so fabulous. And it's also, I've worked out over the years that the baton is also a door knocker. It's like the night porter from Macbeth. Knock, knock, knock. Here's a fine knocking indeed. And what it is that you're knocking on the door. As you come in with that baton, you are telling all the spectators and all the millions of people watching on TV, here come the Comrades runners. I'm the first one. And I'm knocking on the door to tell you, here they come. But the bravest, toughest, nicest, most incredible human beings from around the world, you know, heroes and heroines, they're all behind me, but they're coming. Some of them are only going through halfway, but they're on their way, and you must get ready to welcome them. So if you say to me, what's the most fun? Nothing replaces winning, you know. Especially winning when you've got a good lead. I had a couple where I had to have a look over my shoulder, you know, but winning with a good lead is, yeah, well, I would swap my soul for another win, but I can't. I sold my soul a long time ago.
I love the 12th hour of the Comrades, watching the 12th hour when the bell rings, and I feel so sorry for the athletes that have got the one foot over the line, the other foot the other way, and they're like, no, you don't get a medal, time, that's it.
So those to me are the heroes, you know, the heroines, because they're not genetically suited or they are old or whatever it is. And they are out there, to put it into perspective, because it's winter, they start in the dark.
Yeah.
Comrades start in the dark and they finish in the dark. It's got dark and they come in. And it's not a bell, by the way, it's a gun. And
yes.
It's brutal. And I have fired it and I don't ever want to fire it again. Because with the people are pouring in at the end, they are pouring in, because if you give people a barrier, they will run to the barrier. So it's 12 hours. And if you are 1 second over 12 hours, you're not a finisher. You'll get a handshake. You'll be in the newspapers the next day as the first person who didn't make it. But it's kind of, well done, Michelle. So bad luck. See you next week.
Yeah.
You don't get a medal. And the gun is fired on the, I mean, as I said, I've done it. There's an official, you turn your back on the runners. on the finish line. And there's an official who stands in front of you and he counts you down, 10, 9, 8, 7. He's looking at the official clock. And they put a blocker in front of you, a big rugby player crouches in front of you because some of the other runners try and tackle you to stop you firing the gun.
Oh.
And so that just blocks anybody who might be coming. And that's it. When you get to 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, bang. I in my year, I gave the runners about 2 more seconds because I pretended I didn't know what I had to do. And they just said, pull the trigger. Yeah. And that's it. Yeah. So it's very brutal.
When you were doing it in like 5 hours, 24, whatever, and like double that time, you know, plus more,
yeah.
Would you stay till the end or would you like sod this? Oh, I know, I'm having always. A bath, putting my feet up.
Never, ever miss the end. I'm trying to think of the English runner, Carla Molinari, I think it was. She's an English runner. She's got the Land's End to John O'Groats record. She came eighth or ninth in the ladies' race in Comrades. I think it was Carla who said to me, she sat down after she crossed the line, because obviously she's very tired, and she just had a tracksuit top and she started in a drink and she just watched the other runners coming in, and she said 5 hours later she was still sitting in the same place.
Wow.
Because you completely transfixed, because you see the full gamut of human emotion. You know, when you make people do something so hard, you see the best of people and how they help each other. And, you know, in the front of the race, yeah, it's pretty brutal and we're racing each other. But if I was running alongside another runner and he dropped his cup of water at a table, I'll take a sip of mine first and then I'll hand mine to him, you know. So we've got that spirit and you can't tear yourself away. So I have some years gone away to have a quick bath or a shower and then come back, but I will never, ever miss the last hour.
Yeah.
Never. Hour. The last hour is the peak of the Comrades Marathon. That's Comrades.
What was your nutrition like? What got you through those miles?
Oh, wow. So in my day, I had a seafood diet. If I saw food, I ate it. You know, that I mean, I ate like a front-end loader. Now I have to be careful. I think we weren't the healthiest. Thanks to Ron Hill, who's just sadly died.
Yeah.
Ron Hill did the Salton diet, the depletion followed by the carbohydrate loading. Mm. We all followed him because he said that was the best thing and it worked beautifully for me. The week before, 3 days of training, no carbohydrates, and then you rest and then 3 days of carb. And then in the race, in my day, in the early days, it was the only things that were out there was water and flat Coca-Cola, you know, and then later on came the energy drinks, which we all used. But because it's such a long race and because people take so many hours to run, I'm boasting, I would say that the tables at a South African road race are better than any that I have ever seen in any race. First of all, they stretch for about 200 meters. At a race like Comrades, you can ask them for anything from potatoes to bananas to chocolate to soup to Coke to energy drinks. And if they haven't got it, they will run and get it for you. You can't actually believe. On that day, if you're a Comrades runner, the spectators and the helpers will do anything to help you get to the finish. The following day, if you tried to ask someone for something, they'd look at you like, what kind of a cheek have you got on? But you've got that number on your chest and you're running Comrades, they'll do whatever.
Was last year the first year, 2020, that the Comrades never...
No, it didn't. It didn't happen in the Second World War.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Because of the Second World War, it didn't happen. Yeah, but so we didn't have it last year, and looks like we're not going to have it this year. There's some rumours we still might at the end of the year, but 2022 will be absolutely spectacular. You need to enter. It's a downrun.
It's the heat, Bruce. I don't know how you guys do it in the heat. It's just so
hot. It's not always hot. 1982 is freezing. 1965 it snowed. So you can remember it's our winter.
Yeah.
So it can, but generally 90% of the time it's hot. It's similar in a way to, because it's similar to Boston Marathon, which I've run one Boston. And the year I ran Boston 2012, it was absolutely baking hot. It was a furnace. And yet, later, Desi Linden, I remember watching her run in the freezing rain. So at Comrades, it's a little bit like that. It's a gamble that you're going to get on the day.
So you're definitely going to be there the next one for the big celebrations.
Yeah, but I've done my 30.
I'm not saying taking part, but you're going to be part of the celebrations.
Without a doubt. No, but also I wouldn't miss it for anything. You've got to be out of your mind, because if you're a past winner, I'm going to be honest with you, it's a massive ego trip. I mean, if you're a past winner, everybody wants some of your time. Everybody wants a photograph, an autograph. Why would you not go? I mean,
true.
Running, as I am not running, then you can do the whole, all the cocktail parties and the fun. And you don't have to worry about wrapping yourself in cotton wool because you're not running. No. And in fact, for me, was very special because it was my 30th. I ran my last Comrades with Zola Budd.
Oh, the barefoot runner, for the listeners that don't know. I remember watching her at the Olympics and was just fascinated by Zola.
Yeah, so Zola ran her first run. And I came around the corner with about 20, 25 kilometers to go on the road. And there was Zola. She was walking. She was broken. She'd gone out too fast. And I remember thinking, yes, you cheeky little imp. What's a 5,000 meter runner know about running 90 Ks of hills? And I went straight past her because I thought, wow, I'm going to just show Zola. And I'd gone just a short distance past her. And I thought, what have you done? This is the marketing opportunity of a lifetime. So I pulled full brakes, stopped. And then I said to Zola, come, I'll take you through. Let's go. And we ran together.
Oh. And
she's a lady of very few words, which I like, because I don't like talking when I'm hurting. Because it doesn't matter what speed you're running, you hurt in common.
Yeah.
We just water, we talked. And every now and again, she said in Afrikaans, you see this fair, which I'll translate for you, means, wow, it's far. And when we finished, it was the same as winning. It was the same. We came into the stadium and the crowd went mad because Zola's she's an icon.
Yeah.
And she was doing her first and I was doing my 30th. So, yeah, it was a spectacular one. I just thought, you know what? I can't run the most number of Comrades because, just as an interesting point, Comrades are two people who've run the most, Barry Holland and Louis Messain, have run 47.
Mm.
So they die tomorrow. I have to run 17 more years just to catch up with them. So I think 30 is a good number to call it quits. And
you're only 66, Bruce. You got more time in you.
I know I could, but the problem is they haven't died. So every year they run another one.
Yeah, true.
So I have to.
True.
And yeah, Louis is starting to look a little bit frail, but Barry is as strong as an ox. So he's good for 50 at least. I'll watch Barry do it.
So other than the Comrades, you know, you have other records. You know, you're the former world record for over 50 miles and you had that for like 21 years. So it was 1983. Yeah.
And Jim Wormsley beat it by 13 seconds, but I'm not upset.
Are you sure? The tone of your voice says...
No, you know what, the thing about a record being taken from... And so there's a remarkable Comrades and South African runner who's died, Wally Haywood. And Wally ran the Comrades when he was 80, but he also won five times. And he gave me a wonderful piece of advice once. He said, remember, Bruce, you only borrow records. You keep titles.
Yeah.
And he was right, because you borrow a record and eventually somebody takes it from you. So while you've got it, you honor it, you treasure it, you're happy that you're the record holder, and you must be delighted that the record's been taken, because it means the distance and the race is growing. When you stagnate as the record holder for so long, it's not because you were so brilliant, it's because people don't run that distance. You know, so you've got to, or because they don't have an interest in it. So, you know, you could be the world record holder for, I don't know, for balancing 3,000 tiddlywinks on your nose. But is it a meaningful record, and will anyone take it? But, you know, if you're the world record holder for 800 meters, even if you only for one season, wow, you were the world record holder for 800 meters. So, yeah, Wally Haywood's advice, you borrow records, you keep titles. So Wally Haywood will always be the winner of the 1930 Comrades, the 1951, the 50, 53, 54. You know, those were his titles. And he's... But his records are long. I mean, we're running half an hour faster than Wally ran in his day.
But it's not just the comrades, though. In the UK, you won our London to Brighton 3 times. And that's where you, I've spoken to, and we'll mention him again later, Bob Emberson, who's our 80-year-old Northampton park runner, who just recently did his 400th park run.
Yes, what a lovely.
Yeah, and he says hello, by the way. I just spoke to him.
Yeah, please say hi.
And I've emailed you a photo that he was desperate for me to forward to you of a newspaper clip of you actually running. It's his favourite photo of you.
With my sister giving me a drink.
Yeah,
it's a lovely photo. I look quite athletic. So that was London to Brighton. It's very sad that it doesn't exist anymore. I'm terribly sad about that because it was an iconic race as well. It was especially, it was like the sibling race of comrades. And if you look at the winners of both races, there are many runners who have won them both or competed in both. There are a lot of English runners who have won comrades. John Smith, Dave Bagshaw, trying to think, Bernard Gomesall. And then there's vice versa. There's South Africans who've won Brighton. And it's just so sad that I think what happened was it was just too amateur for its own good. And it became more and more complicated to run. You go down the A23. So across Westminster Bridge from Big Ben, across the Westminster Bridge, past the Elephant and Castle, you see, I know it off by heart. And then all the way down the A23 under the aqueduct, turn right at the pavilion. And when you get to the pier, Brighton Pier, you finish. And it was a fabulous race. I loved it. But the complete opposite, well, in some ways similar to comrades, in that it was 53, 54 miles, had some hills. I don't know, that's downs. They should be called the Sussex Ups. I remember that. I struggled on a few of those hills. But then the reverse was that it only had about 200 runners, and they were all elite. So everybody who was there knew what they were doing. There were no 10-hour runners. There are no 12-hour runners in London to Brighton. It's all pretty crack runners. I'm just very sad that it doesn't exist, but I'm delighted that I ran it 3 times. I loved it. Big Ben starting it. I mean, you get there 10 to 7 on a Sunday morning in October, and you think you've come on the wrong day because there's nobody. There's just nobody there. And at 10 to 7, a few skinny, emaciated, pale runners shuffle out there, and a bobby walks into the road and he stops the traffic. There is hardly any at 7 o'clock on a Sunday morning. Yeah, and Big Ben chimes and off you go.
And that's it.
And and they had these wonderful, wonderful seconding tables in complete contrast to the comrades, where you would get, where the local vicar would offer you lemon barley water and tennis biscuits, you know, while you're running. So you had to have your own, seconds to look after you. But I ran against one of Scotland's greatest runners, Don Ritchie, who was, what a hero. He's one of the legends of ultra running. Sadly, also passed away a couple of years ago. And I had some great time.
Oh, so what do you think now of races that pop up, like the Barclay Marathon? Have you heard of that one, Bruce, in the USA?
I vaguely know, but yeah, it's horrendous distance, isn't it? It's like you run until you can't run anymore.
Yeah, so, it's like 5 marathons, but they're like the hardest 5 marathons to do.
I have deep admiration, you know, for the runners who run them. Just not me. I would say that I was I specialized and enjoyed the short end of ultra running, if you know what I mean. It sounds like a ridiculous, like an oxymoron, but I preferred running 50 milers, 100 Ks at the absolute outside limit, but fast, you know, fast. So not kind of plodding all day long forever and ever and ever. I've been as a pacer to the Western States 100. It's absolutely incredible. I've got deep admiration for people who can run that race. 24-hour races and things. I still enjoyed being relatively far the shorter stuff. I mean, not in the league of the top, but my best marathon time was 2:17, which was compared to Eliud Kipchoge and the top guys, but it's still not slow.
No.
And so I enjoyed being, if you ask me, what do I love? I used to love our clubs, we've got a very tight club system in South Africa. If you want to run proper road races, you have to be a member of a running club. And with that, you get a license number and you get insurance and that sort of thing. And so I was first of all, my university. And then when I left Wits University, I ran for a club called Rand Athletic Club. And we've got clubs, and they're a similar way to you guys, but we wouldn't run any race not in our club colours. So
yeah, it's very similar here.
We can identify ourselves by which club.
So yeah, let's get on to my favourite subject, park run. How are you involved? How are you involved in park run in South Africa?
Okay, so Paul Sinton Hewitt, who started park run, actually was one of my seconds in South Africa, and he came from South Africa. And we all know the history of how he started the parkrun because he got going with the first one in Bushy. And I came across to run London Marathon in 2011. And Paul got hold of me and said, please run Bushy Parkrun. And I absolutely fell in love with it, the whole concept. And so I said, I've got to start it in South Africa. And he said, that's why I asked you. And so we started it in South Africa, exactly the same as in the UK when it started. We started with one in a park in Johannesburg called Delta Park. And 26 people came, and just before COVID lockdown, because we can't go at the moment, but we're not, our park runs are slowly starting to come back. But just before we got locked down, we were 220 events with 1.2 million registered members. So it's going, and really, and also going up into Africa. So we've got park runs in Namibia, we've got park runs in Eswatini, Swaziland, and in the future, the plan is parkruns in Zimbabwe, parkruns in Tanzania, parkruns in Botswana. We can't wait to get going.
How do you feel like when you heard last weekend, our Bob, 88, doing the most, being the oldest to reach 400, other people just generally all ages doing parkrun?
I think it's absolutely wonderful. If you just could point out to Bob that I've got 420, so he doesn't get too cocky. I think it's wonderful. If I can boast about South Africa, I think we were really the country that really opened parkrun up for slow walkers. When I ran my first couple of parkruns in the UK, they're fast, and they were kind of done and dusted after 40 minutes. We've got people who come in after an hour, hour and 15 minutes, and they feel welcome and safe, and no one's going to laugh at them or body shame them in any way. And it's the one place where they can really feel at home and be part of a community and get some exercise. So I think that was one of the things. We're proud of the fact that our parkrun average is the slowest in the world, in the parkrun world.
Oh, wow. Really? Okay.
2 minutes.
Yeah.
And remember, we've got some very fast guys who can get around those things in 14. So to have an average of 42 is, we're proud of that.
You're saying about the slowness. In Northampton, we're very much bringing diversity. So we've got deaf runners, we've got visually impaired.
Yeah, brilliant.
We've got wheelchair users. How are you bringing that into the park runs in South Africa?
Yeah, we have all sorts of disabilities at park run. Sorry, some of them obviously can't accommodate, everybody.
Same here.
Yeah, we've got some that are kind of verging on trail runs that you just couldn't get a wheelchair around. We've got a couple on beaches that if you were in a wheelchair, you'd just get bogged down. But let's put it this way: if you're a person with disabilities, you can find a park run. And you can enjoy it, and there'll be one that will welcome you, and you'll be great. And so, yeah, we love that we've got the full range of people who attend.
That's great. So I'm going to end off. I'm going to ask you some questions, if that's okay.
Sure.
I bet you've been asked them before, but we'll try and hopefully be different. So, what's the worst injury for your running career have you had, and how long was you out for?
So I have lost the cartilage in my right knee. Technically, I'm out forever, but I refuse to allow an injury to stop me. So I hobble. I'm not in pain. It's just a funny style. I used to people used to say I look great when I was running fast. I don't anymore, but I don't care. And I'm not going to be doing too many more marathons and things like that, but park run, half marathon. So that's the worst injury. And it's kind of, unless you can invent a way of making cartilage grow in your knee, it's with me for life. And the surgeons I've spoke to have said, well, they're not replacing my knee because I'm not in pain and my knee's not damaged. It just doesn't have cartilage. So that's the worst. Yeah.
What's your favorite part of the Comrades?
The start. There is nothing more emotional than the start of the Comrades Marathon. So it's 25,000 people gathered there at the start, all in their starting batches, dancing, singing, and then they sing the national anthem. They sing a very traditional song called Shosholoza, which means keep on going, keep on going. Then they play Chariots of Fire. Oh. And when Chariots of Fire ends, the race is started by a man called Max Trimborn, who does a cockerel crow. And I'm not even going to try and do it. In 1985, but they recorded him. And when the cockerel crow goes, the cockerel crows twice. When the cockerel crow goes, you know you're running. And it's such an emotional moment. Then the gun goes.
Those thinking of doing the Comrades or are going to do it for the first time when it's next up, what's the best tip or advice you can give them?
Get started and believe in yourself. Very ordinary people become heroes. Yeah, that's it. Just start.
Nowadays, what is your favorite distance to run?
I love a half marathon and a park run. I love going hard at a park run, even though I've got a gammy knee. If I see another gray-headed, balding guy ahead of me, I'm not letting him finish ahead of me. I'm going for it. I'm still competitive. Yeah.
Oh, with me personally at Northampton, it's the buggies. When the buggies
open. Yeah, yeah, not letting a buggy part. Yeah, be yeah.
Are you a park run tourist?
Yes, absolutely.
You are.
I've done most of the park runs in South Africa. I'm missing a few. By the way, on the borders of the Kruger National Park, on the beaches, in Swaziland, all over, in the winelands, in the mountains, in the townships. And then I've also got quite a few flags of the world. So I've done Russia, Poland, America, Australia, UK, Scotland.
So you're a proper park run tourist.
I'm a proper tourist, yeah. Love it.
Are you, when you look, saying that, when you go on holiday, are you as bad as me and making sure there's a park run where you're going to go abroad?
Yes, I was very stressed because I was a guest speaker in India about 18 months ago to the Comrades Runners in India, which I absolutely enjoyed, and the hospitality was incredible, but they don't have any park runs. Oh. It was stressful. Yeah.
So how do you feel now? So when you were at your peak and when you're at the start of your running career, and we are only, you know, it's 30 years ago, which, let's be honest, is not really that long, three decades of running. Marathons and ultras were not as big and as popular and in your face as they are now. How do you feel seeing people that from all levels and for charities doing these distances?
No, I'm delighted. I think it's wonderful to see that. And there's no such thing to me as a slow marathon runner. There's just a marathon runner who, you know, takes a bit more time. And I think it's fantastic for our sport. And if it was only the elite and only a small, you know, we'd be a hardcore of nutters. Now, nobody, in my day when I started, people stared at you when you were running, particularly me, because I had long shoulder length blonde hair, yeah, very figure, and a whole lot of people would drive past and think there was a young lady running. And they would stop and offer me a lift because they would think, why are you running? I'll give you a lift. Because you just didn't see runners.
So just anyone that's thinking of starting running, what advice would you give them?
Make it so easy that you have no problem coming back on day 2 and day 3 and day 10. And I did that by mistake. I stumbled on it by mistake because I told you at the beginning when we were chatting, my first run was 10 minutes around my university rugby field. And because it was only 10 minutes, I had no problem the next day with coming out and doing another 10 minutes. And then about a week later, I thought I'll try and do 15 minutes. And because I made it so easy, it was never a burden. And I never had to have an excuse not to, you see. So if you make it unpleasant, you run too hard, too fast, too much clothing, too unpleasant. The first half decent excuse, like it's raining. Oh, I'm not going to run today. Oh, the Olympics on, I want to watch. Then that's it. But if you make it so easy, you will have no problem. And then the second thing is have a goal. And the goal can't be, I want to get healthy and I want to lose weight. The goal's got to be, I am running my local marathon in 3 months' time. I am saving up and I'm going across to South Africa to run Comrades in 9 months' time. You know, that goal, he sits in the back of your mind and makes you keep going.